The Guardian.
The Guardian Books Podcast with Claire Armistead.
Bonjour et bienvenue to this week's Books Podcast. It's the second week of our Europe month and we're focusing on France. We're delighted to discover that the best part of a century after the height of Rive Gauche chic, Paris can still make a big fuss of its finest stars.
And there's tens of thousands of people in here. It's like a sauna, but people are queuing up for hours to get their book signed, and there's something else going off. Another author has turned up here, and it's like the paparazzo scene in the Dolce Vita.
Of course, it wasn't just Camus and Sartre who hung out on the Rive Gauche, but expats like Ernest Hemingway and F. Scott Fitzgerald and Samuel Beckett. Did you know that Godot, in Waiting for Godot, was a famous French cyclist, or so one theory goes? We've all heard of Balzac and Zola, we've sung along to Les Miserables, we've sleuthed with Maigret, and we've wept over Madame Bovary. But how much do we know about contemporary French literature? Is there a Parisian Wallander? Or Wallander, however you pronounce it. And what do the French themselves think of it all? Let's hand you over now to Fikra Gibbons, an Irish bibliophile at large on the streets of Paris.
I'm just outside the Salon du Livre in Paris, which is the biggest books gathering in the whole French literary calendar. It's immense. It's kind of Hay, Cheltenham, Edinburgh Books Festivals all put together and multiplied by 10. We just don't have anything at all like this in England. You've got tens of thousands of readers coming from all over France and all over Europe to meet their favourite authors. There's a lot of international names here, big name novelists to people like Ingrid Betancourt, Boutros Ghali, and Aronine McEwan. And it's the sort of occasion that brings English speakers out in all sorts of inferiority complexes, because we have this idea of the French as being, you know, so much more sophisticated, so much smarter, so much slimmer, so much more literate than us. But when you actually look at the figures, the French read a lot less than us. We publish about 8 times more books than they do every year. And actually, very few French books get translated really worldwide, and very, very few indeed get translated into English. That said, France is far more open to the world than we are. Almost half the books published here are translated, whereas in England, foreign fiction accounts for less than 3% of what we read. Stieg Larsson's Millennium series, for example, was huge here, long before it was even translated into English. So I'm kind of here to find out what French readers are reading now, and just hold up the old stereotypes and see if they hold water anymore. The thing that people are really excited about this year, and the person who all the crowds here tonight have come to see, is not some sort of smart new left-bank novelist or some interestingly exotic writer from the Francophonie, from Africa or from Asia. It's actually a 93-year-old man called Stéphane Hessel, a former resistance fighter, a survivor of the camps, one of the great human rights lawyers of post-war France, a man who has had a great career 40, 50 years ago, but was kind of forgotten, and has come back with this amazing little book called Indignez-vous, which means get angry, a tiny little pamphlet, which in a few days' time will have sold 2 million copies, which is just unprecedented in French publishing. And what's particularly remarkable about this book is that it's cost so little. It costs €3, and so there's a completely different audience, a completely different readership. A lot of the people who've bought it are young, they're students, they're disillusioned, and they have seen in this 93-year-old man a kind of hero. And he is their generational pinup. And a lot of the people here tonight to see Stéphane Hessel are young, are like a third of his age. And I'm going to go and talk to those kids first.
I'm 23.
And he's 93.
Yeah, 70 years older. The thing is, writing like in Indignez-vous and in Engagez-vous to the Hub editions is making me understanding how we should go in politics, mondial politics and French politics. And when we see what's happening around today in Libya, this man of 93 years old is just the great one. What a good idea. Because of his career and because of his life, you know. In 1945, he was a member of the National Council of Resistance in France, and he was the part of the ones who ruled the country just after the end of the Second War. And after that, he began a long career. And at the end, 93 years old, he's writing such great book. Stéphane Hessel can say something that some other persons can't but think as well. You see what I mean? Like some intellectuals who are involved into some ministry or some politics can't say that kind of thing. The thing with Stéphane Hessel is that he's completely free.
I mean, it is an angry book. It's a very angry book.
Of course, but this is an angry world.
Ben, vous aussi, hein? Vous aussi. Gardez-vous bien.
Oui, merci.
That strange ripple through the crowd there was Anna Gavalda, who's one of the great names of French popular fiction, who's just passed with her entourage of something less than 30 people, who said writing books isn't glamorous anymore. I'm here in the salon on the third day, usually the biggest day, the Sunday, and there's tens of thousands of people in here. It's like a sauna. But people are queuing up for hours to get their book signed, and there's something else going off. Another author has turned up here, and it's like the paparazzo scene in the Dolce Vita. Listen. If Anna Gavalda wasn't enough, that's just the arrival of Patricia Cass, the singer, the jazz singer and now author. I'm just fighting my way through the crowd at the Flammarion stand to see one of the hottest editors in Paris at the moment. Her name is Olivia Duleveux. She's at Flammarion, which is where Zola had his books published, and these days Welbeck, Michel Welbeck, is published there. It's really the crème de la crème of French publishing, as Miss Jean Brodie would say. Olivia, we have this idea of the French that kind of dates back to Sartre and de Beauvoir and Le Dumagot and existentialism and Café Exprès. Is that still France?
Well, I wish it were. No, not really. Today, France literature is more about taking the pleasure to read new books, new voices, French and foreign, because we read a lot of different genre and authors here. But no, Saint-Germain-des-Prés is a bit more for tourists today, even though lots of editors meet with writers there just to make the writer feel he's still Sartre and Beauvoir or could be something like that.
This is one interesting difference, isn't it, between French and English publishing, is that you publish a hell of a lot more translated fiction, foreign fiction, than we do.
Yes, actually we are. I think the numbers today are between 40 and 50% of translated fiction in France, whereas maybe 3% in England of translated fiction. One of the reasons that come to me is people like in France to dream in globally, and for fiction they like to have the whole world open.
But in terms of what French people read, how does the reading differ to sort of Anglo-Saxon reading?
For instance, there is one category of book that doesn't exist in England, which is the essays. French are very fond of essays on everything, whereas the English readers like narrative nonfiction. We like to read thinkers and to try through what they think to be intelligent as well, and to be nurtured by what their vision of the world. Another thing that is quite different with the French, we like our novels a lot. We like a fast read. We take a lot of trains, tube, and we want a good thriller, or for a woman, a good chick lit or a good romance. But we like also to think. So Welbeck would be someone that would feed a lot of things. You can read with Welbeck, you can laugh with Welbeck, you can think with Welbeck, you can shock, you can laugh, you can hate. He's a writer that is definitely French for us.
The essays are often very slim volumes, almost like pamphlets sometimes, and they're often of varying quality. Often it's famous people writing them. Why do you think the French people are so accro? Why are they so addicted to this sort of work?
I think there is something very French about protesting and expressing an opinion. We like that a lot. We express ourselves a lot through French Revolution, through even the French singing, is most of the time is expressing protest, the protest songs are not necessarily only Dylan, but Noir Désir did some, etc. And this characteristic of our people is also completely reflecting in the essays, which is a tradition that comes from a very, very long time ago. And if you think about Voltaire, when he defended Chevalier de la Barre in the 18th century, or if you think about Stéphane Hessel today, whereas they are or not known, people want to express a point of view, their point of view, and just let people see it. But there's also, it might be linked also with something quite French as well, which is the caricature. It's a pamphlet, but through a drawing that was very much up to date in the old times. I remember some against Marie Antoinette at the time.
You often still find them in the streets sometimes, actually, just stuck up on the wall, little tracts against something in the neighbourhood or against the world in general.
Yes, and in a way, an essay might be that. The short essays expressing an opinion is related to this idea of, okay, this is democracy, and we can express ourselves, and we will use what we can to express ourselves. And what is cheaper than a pen and a sheet of paper? And in a way, this is how starts essays, usually.
One of the big differences between Britain and France is the way books are sold. I mean, here there's a fixed price for books, which means you have a hell of a lot of independent bookshops, but on the other side of it, you have probably more expensive books. What do you think is best?
I really am a militant for the fixed price, because for me it is the only condition for the reader to be free to read what he wants. Without a fixed price, it is to the booksellers to decide what is gonna be read, and usually there is a bestsellerization that is ensuing, because of course, the more sellable books will be, the more reduced, hence the more read. And that is a tragedy for me, because when you come to the bookshop, there might be, okay, some big piles of, let's say, Stieg Larsson, but there will also be one copy of a very, very new book that from a very independent publisher that is not with a big print run, and you will be able to choose that as well.
For me, one of the great discoveries of learning French, in fact, it was almost worth learning French to read Alain Mabankou, a writer from Congo-Brazzaville. It's just pure joy reading him in French. I mean, is there a big market for the literature of the Francophonie, of French-speaking Africa and the Caribbean and Asia?
I wouldn't speak as an expert here, because it's not my field, but I think there is nothing like what's existing in England since Salman Rushdie and Midnight Children, with this whole Indian, Pakistanis culture, literature. I think of Zadie Smith, Monica Ali, Nikita Lalwani. I think it's a big part of the fiction market in England. I wouldn't say it's the same in France, especially as you don't think of Marine Diaye, who won the Goncourt last year, as other thing than a French writer, or Dai Cj, he is Chinese, since he's writing in French, you think of him as a French writer, such as Jonathan Little is for us also a French writer. Maybe as long as you write in this language, you're part of this language.
So it's a little bit like the Republican model of integration. It's a little bit like that. If you're in France, you're French.
That is a field I'm not comfortable to. I work in fiction. I have no idea about politics.
But what about the literature of the cité, of the estates, the banlieue?
There is literature coming from there. That is really interesting in terms of rhythm. It's such a written slam, and there's a whole energy there that is very inspiring, as inspiring as the graffitis or the tags or things like that in paintings. A few have developed through the years, but it is an inspiring tendency.
I'm in front of the Albin Michel stand, where I'm watching a very curious sight indeed. It's one of France's best-loved writers, Amélie Nothomb, who, like many great French writers, is not French at all, is actually Belgian, who is queuing up to meet her, the public, should I say, are queuing up to meet her. And she's dedicating books, and people are queuing up to take pictures of her. And it's a little bit like being at the zoo, because people come up, they take a picture of Amélie, she has a look at the picture, and because in France the subject of a picture has droit d'image, she can give approval or not, and quite a few people are having to wait their photographs. Amélie herself is quite a striking individual. She looks a little bit like a kind of escaped Gothic clown. She's wearing a top hat with an artificial orchid and stage makeup with sort of super, super red lips. So I'm here with Stéphanie Ocher, who's the winner of this year's Prix Tidemonnier, one of the main prizes of the French Literary Year, for her book La Distribution de Lumière. And I want to ask you, what sort of state is French literature in now?
It's quite good. As far as I'm concerned, as a critic, I read several books. I mean, most of the books which are published from September to November for the prizes, and I'm very interested in what's going out. And for this year, it was the publication was quite good, maybe because there are more and more writers who tend to be very interested to the world around them, and who are going far away from the autofiction, which was quite a fashion in the 90s, and the writers are interested in subjects like the war or what is happening in the suburbs, and they tend to work the language differently from what's used to be the fashion, maybe in the 80s or in the 80s or 90s, and it's a good thing because we used to read American writers, but now we are quite proud of French writers too. There was two writers from Actes Sud, Mathias Sénard and Jérôme Ferrari, which are young writers and who are very interested in writing about, for instance, the war in Algeria, or Michelangelo's work on a bridge, or this woman too, Mélise de Carangal, who got a very famous prize and who made a very, very strong books, and Naissance d'un pont, which was quite amazing, and a very strong novel.
Can a young writer like you really make a living from writing in France?
It's very, very, very difficult, because we used to say that, and we tend to say that there is only 1% from the writers who can live from their work. Most of the time, the writers are teachers or journalists, and I'm journalist too. We don't have the same status as the actresses and the actors. It's a precarious way of living if you're not a bestseller.
Not hugely different, I have to say, to the prospects facing struggling English writers. That was Fiacre Gibbons revelling in Paris's annual Salon de Livre. Here in the studio with me is our former French correspondent, John Henley. Hello, John.
Hello, hi.
Hi. And we'll also be joined virtually, that's in words if not in person, by some of the participants in the French leg of our World Literature Tour. John, are you a man with an inferiority complex vis-a-vis French literature?
Obviously, there are some world greats, but there are equally in the English. There's not a lot to choose between them, really. I think what is different is the encouragement and the kind of stimulus and the interest that there is in literature in France. It's partly because, you know, French culture, which constantly feels itself sort of under attack from these sort of nefarious Anglo-Saxon influences and what have you, there's a real desire to keep the French language developing and alive and what have you. But there's genuinely a real government, sort of official focus on promoting literature and promoting the buying of books. You know, I mean, Fikra mentioned this sort of single fixed price,
which is unlike the net book agreement, which we abolished, didn't we?
And it's quite similar to the net book agreement, actually. But as you rightly say, we did abolish it, which means that now you can buy a book for a sort of pound each. I mean, it's basically squeezed out all but the real mega bestsellers, essentially. I mean, what's made the difference in France has not just been this sort of fixed price agreement. That came in about 30 years ago, very farsightedly. But as recently as 2007, the government introduced a thing called the Plan Livre, the sort of the book plan, which, for example, was aimed at keeping small, independent, local booksellers alive. You know, they get tax relief, they get interest-free loans. In Paris, for example, the local council will actually buy up vacant retail buildings, and in the name of kind of diversity and of keeping culture alive, will rent them at low rent to small bookshops. And as a result of that, I mean, quite astonishingly, there are 792 independent bookshops in Paris alone.
That's amazing.
792 and 3,000 in France as a whole. And apparently, I looked this up, I hope it's right, on the internet just before I came in, there are now 10 independent bookshops in the whole of New York City.
Now, let's just turn a little bit to the publishers. This month is the centenary of Gallimard, which is one of the most distinguished French independent publishing houses, isn't it? And it's being celebrated with a whole exhibition devoted to them at the Bibliothèque Nationale. Would we do that?
I think it's hard to imagine that, really. I mean, partly because so many of our great publishers have been kind of subsumed into big, you know, multinational groups. Mind you, one of the most aggressive publishers on the international scene is French. I mean, Hachette Philippaki has bought up publishers all around the world. But it's certainly true that it's easier for a French independent publisher to stay independent. And yeah, as you say, there is a real pride, I think, in this feeling that these, you know, 100 years of independent publishing in a world in which the media has changed so fast over that century really is no mean feat. And it's doing very well. Gallimard is doing very, very well.
And in that display, they have amazing things like the original watercolours for Saint-Exupéry's Petit Prince. I would dearly love to see those. And also manuscripts for Simone de Beauvoir's Second Sex and Proust, you know, a Proust manuscript. Wouldn't you love to see that? However, there are still the big sellers and the rest. It is still very difficult for new, young talent, isn't it?
Absolutely. And I think that, I mean, that's true everywhere. It's partly true in France because although it is easier to get published as a new, young writer, you know, sales are fairly small. A lot of bestsellers in France sell in the tens of thousands, at most hundreds of thousands of copies. You don't make much of a living. I mean, I think the other thing that came out of those interviews that was very interesting was, and absolutely right, is that there is this market still in France for the book of ideas. You know, I mean, that's a very big cultural difference. I mean, the French are about ideas and ideals and principles. We are about the concrete and the pragmatic and the sort of anecdotal. And it's a huge difference. And you look at the success of people like Bernard-Henri Lévy, you know, the sort of popular philosopher, incredibly popular in France and always jetting off to, you know, Afghanistan or Pakistan and doing these kind of, you know, really, you know, engaged works. It would be very hard for somebody like that to survive, let alone thrive in Britain, because I think we tend to prick that kind of ego. I mean, you need an immense ego to go off somewhere and deliver the definitive verdict. Exactly.
We'd get all ironic on him.
Exactly. I mean, we'd puncture him within minutes, you know. Yeah.
He said, interestingly, he was quoted in last weekend's Guardian Review, which had all the literary editors from all over the four countries in Europe that we're covering, talking about what people are reading. And Le Monde's literary editor, Raphaël Rayrol, quoted Henri Lévy, who said, the French situation is unusual in that instead of being permanently fixed, intellectual groups now reform around each issue like iron filings around a magnet. I'm really interested in this.
That's certainly true. That's the great thing about a French intellectual. You know, they are really capable of expressing an opinion on absolutely anything. Incidentally, just drop it very quickly. One of the reasons why literature is still so strong in France is the focus on it in French schools, and it's taught copiously, and an awareness and a kind of sensitivity into literature and poetry starts very early in France. My kids are both at the French, one of the French primary schools.
My wife is French. Yes.
Both my kids go to French, the one of the French schools in London, which will eventually feed through to the lycée. They are learning a classic French poem a fortnight, which they have to recite out loud. And yeah, they're kind of, you know, 10 and 8.
Let's just move on now to autofiction, which isn't something that we have, do we? We have autobiography, memoir, which you could argue is fiction, but autofiction.
That's right. I mean, that's caused a few problems as well. I mean, one of the great practitioners of that is an extraordinary woman called Christine Angot, who writes these searing and very kind of self-flagellating novels. And they are novels, although they are about a character called Christine Angot, which is rather confusing. And it's quite a literary genre in France and has become very popular. I don't know whether it would work here. It does work in France, and it's yet another subject that the intellectuals have jumped onto. And it's caused a few legal problems. There was a very famous case very recently of an author, Régis Joffré, who wrote a novel which he'd called a novel, and it was quite plainly very closely inspired by the great banking scandal, the Stern affair. You know, the Stern family were quite happy for this to go along while it was still a novel. And when it started to be turned into a film or TV series, they sent the lawyers in.
Let's turn now to the bestsellers. This is as published in Guardian Review, presumably as in consultation with Le Monde. We've got the top five. Number one is Indignez-vous, which means cry out. It's by Stéphane Hessel, former diplomat's plea for outrage from French people at the state of their nation.
Fikre mentioned that in his piece. It's a quite remarkable story. I mean, 93 years old. I mean, it's a call to arms to a generation fed up with globalization and foreign wars which shouldn't be fought. He's strongly pro-Palestinian. Would it have sold 2 million copies if it had cost 20 euros, like most French hardbacks do, rather than three euros, which this one does.
If they hadn't abandoned the book agreement for that in that particular case. Then at number two, we've got Michel Houellebecq, La Carte et le Territoire, which is his new one. We all know about Houellebecq, don't we?
Probably the best known contemporary French writer outside France, yeah.
Number three, we've got Les Écureuils de Central Park sont tristes de lundi, by Catherine Poncol.
I don't know an awful lot about that.
New York-based novel, apparently. Then number four, we've got Métronome, l'histoire de France au rythme.
That's been a huge success. It's a history of
the
France
metro, is it?
Told through the metro stations of Paris.
Oh, what a fantastic idea. It's a sort of psychogeography.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah. And was a huge hit of last year, actually, and it's still there.
And then at number five, we've got a diet book, the Illustrated Diet.
That's the great French. Yes, these are the French Atkins diet, basically, which apparently...
Pierre Ducon.
3.5 million skinny French people can't be wrong, the idea.
We had a few tubby Germans who were also into it last week. Now, just very quickly, let's look at some of the books that are recommended by our literary tourists. There are quite a few Gallimard authors like Sartre, Genet, Saint-Exupéry, but Saint-Exupéry isn't there for Le Petit Prince, but for Wind, Sand and Stars in its
wonderful,
English name.
Wonderful.
Is that
absolutely
what a favourite of yours?
Book.
Tell us
yes.
a little bit
yeah,
about
absolutely.
That.
Yeah, absolutely. He was this extraordinary writer and this great aviator at the same time. And the most extraordinary voyages, he flew on the French mail planes, which went across to what was then French colonial Africa, and in fact died in a plane accident. But it's this the myth of the writer-adventurer, except, boy, I mean, he really can write.
Yeah. Now, we've got Octave Mirbeau. Is that a familiar name? That's Sebastian Roche. And Redmond T.A. says, a heady book, at once beautiful and despicable, dealing with the corruption of minors by priests at a private school for boys. Mirbeau also wrote The Torture Garden and Diary of a Chambermaid, incredibly original works of art. There's no other author like him. Hmm. One of the conventions of this particular podcast, I would say to people who think how ignorant we are, is that we can admit our ignorance. We're taking instruction from our listeners.
And I'm afraid it's been 5 years since I lived in France. So
we've got two Houellebecqs. We've got Atomized, which Haymarco says is the best analysis of the modern world I've probably ever read. But interestingly, we've got La Possibilité Dun Eel, which is his critical writings, which are not so familiar to us, are we?
No, they're not. You know, it quite surprised me the length of time it took for Welbeck to get translated. And that, I think, largely because of his shock value and because of the large amounts of sex in lots of his books. But he's a very original mind.
And then right at the beginning of the programme, for those who have long memories, I posed the question, where is the French Valander? And I may have found the answer from Manda 49, who cites Fred Vargas.
Fred Vargas, one of my favourite French authors. If you're into crime, then Fred Vargas, absolutely fantastic. He has this extraordinary character called Inspector Adamsberg. And they're very quirky, very kind of rococo mysteries, extraordinarily bizarre plot lines that can start off with a dog dropping and end up with kind of wolves in the Massif Central. Wonderful stories. I interviewed her a couple of times while I was there, and she said to me that her basic plot line, the skeleton of the book, she writes in about 3 days, and then she takes about 3 months to add what she calls la petite musique,
the little
music that kind of keeps it, and they're a quite extraordinary read. I haven't read any of them in English, so I don't know how they translate, but they're absolutely wonderful books. And Adamsberg basically solves crimes by, it's not like Wallander thinks, Wallander actively thinks, and Mankell, Henning Mankell, the author, says that you know, that's one of the great challenges, is to have this guy standing in the middle of the room and just thinking for 10 pages. Adamsberg doesn't even think, he just kind of imbibes and experiences and lets the whole thing wash over him, and at the very end, it all becomes blindingly obvious. If I could mention my personal favourite, again, I'm a big crime fan, but it's quite an old book now. There's a guy called Manchette who wrote a book called Le Petit Bleu de la Côte Ouest, which transformed French crime writing. He was the first French crime writer to sort of buy the kind of the directness and the kind of slightly hard-boiled tone of American crime fiction. He imported that to France. He did it absolutely brilliantly. And in a French context and French culture, it works just superbly. It's very simple French as well, so it's a very good book for somebody to start with who's maybe not completely confident about their mastery of French. Le Petit Bleu de la Côte Ouest, fantastic book.
Well, thank you very much, John. That's our weekend reading sorted out.
Pleasure.
And so ends the second week in our Europe series. Next week we're going off to Spain, whose literature, like English, straddles more than one continent. But before we go, Sarah Crown joins us from the Guardian Books desk to tell us what else we have in store over the next week. Hi, Sarah.
Hi. So, lots of stuff coming up. In Saturday Review, we've teamed up with the British Library to bring you a series of top writers talking about writing. They range from Ian McEwan to Beryl Bainbridge, Ian Rankin, and then this mystery writer.
You can settle for the appearance of success. Celebrity, you know, is not the same thing as really being respected for being good at what you do. Being good at writing is different from being respected for being good on radio quiz shows or being good on television. It's different. And it may be, if you're lucky, that you hang on to your artistic integrity and everyone likes your work so much that you make some money out of it. It doesn't happen in a big way if you're a poet. But I think it's more and more difficult, and I'm very depressed, you know, this whole thing of young people just wanting to be famous for the sake of being famous. If you want to be a writer, a serious writer, your focus has to be on writing as well as you can, and all those other things are incidental. And it's nice if you get some recognition, but it shouldn't really matter.
And we're offering 10 prizes of the double CD featuring those writers. It's called The Writing Life, to the first 10 people who correctly identify the speaker. So if you want to enter that competition, you should email your answer to books.competition@guardian.co.uk.
We've also got a feature on that Gallimard exhibition we mentioned earlier at the Bibliothèque Nationale in Paris, and it's full of lots of delights that I didn't, too many even to mention in this podcast.
And then on Sunday in the Observer's New Review, we've got Robert McCrum remembering the life of Ernst Schumacher, who used to work for the Observer from the 1940s to the 1960s, and whose book, Small is Beautiful, remains one of the most influential popular socioeconomic texts of the 20th century.
It's quite funny, everybody thinks they've invented this genre new, don't they? But they haven't at all. It was all Schumacher what done it.
Yeah, and apparently he even goes into the Big Society and everything like that, so Yes, he got there first. And then on the website, please do join in our World Literature Tour, which is about to head off to Spain. And also remember to check out our new children's website, all sorts of news and views there from the world of children's books.
And that's it from us for this week. From me, Claire Armistead, Sarah Crown, John Henley and Fiacre Gibbons, and our producer, Tim Mabey. Au revoir.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.